Welcome in to the Yachts and Audibles podcast, Fall Camp Edition, Eric. You and I have made it to football season. The diehard Duck fan has made it to football season. And if you're a diehard Duck fan, you're probably listening to this show here on the Yachts and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Prame, Eric Scopel on the show as always. We've gone through Media Day in the Big Ten scope, going to Chicago, 3 days there. We have now concluded our Oregon-centric media day up in the club room of Autzen Stadium. Dane Lanning, Dante Moore, and a handful of other players on both sides of the football. About 30, 40 players spoke with the media.
I believe it was 35.
35, right stab dab in the middle. 35 athletes spoke with the media. Eric and I were there. Our photographer, Jason Fairchild, was there to shoot photos. We've got video. We've got transcripts of Lanning and Moore up on the site. We've also got multiple stories. Eric dropped a good notebook. We're going to dive into kind of what we learned, some takeaways from that media day at the club room. But also, first and foremost, Eric, we've got some breaking news-ish that it hit right before we started the podcast. Coaches poll is out. You've already seen the poll, so I take away the best guess scenario here. But was there any inkling that Oregon would reach as high as they did? We won't share the number yet. Was there any inkling that you think that they would be this high in the poll?
Yeah, I thought this was maybe not where I anticipated they'd be, but was it within the realm of possibility? Look, Oregon has everything they need this year to make a run, and this ranking preseason, it validates that, it affirms that. It should make Oregon fans, I would think, more optimistic about this season when you look at these polls and just see the respect Oregon is getting here. I think because of the Big Ten poll and where Oregon being behind Ohio State there, it felt unreasonable to think they could be higher than where they are now. But yeah, this feels right. I would have predicted here or a spot or two below.
I'm a little surprised. I was thinking, okay, Oregon's number two in the country.
Yep.
They have 1,637 total points. Ohio State just has over 100 more, 1,741. Mm-hmm. And then the big thing here is, Oregon has almost 50 points more than Georgia, who's at number three. The Ducks are almost 100 points higher than Texas, who's at number four. They are 100 points higher than Notre Dame, who's at five. And then the team that got the second most first place votes in the country, who's Indiana, who's also the defending national champions, undefeated, they're sixth in the country with 1,522. Miami is seven with 1,409. And then there's like a big drop off between Miami and Texas A&M, who's eight, Oklahoma nine, Ole Miss 10. But three Big Ten teams inside the top six. Ohio State obviously is number one. You've also got USC, who checks in at number 14. You have Michigan, who's at 16. A little surprise here for me, Penn State. I think this is Matt Campbell and everyone buying in on what he can do as the head coach for the Nittany Lions. They check in at number 17. The Washington Huskies, they are 19th in the country. And then Iowa, another Big Ten team, checks in at number 22. Boise State, who's on Oregon's schedule, they have 24 votes outside of the top 25. Oklahoma State, who's also on Oregon's schedule, this is a little surprising. They got 22 votes to make into the top 25. Some confidence growing a little bit, if you will, with the Cowboys down in Stillwater. Eric will be at that game in a couple weeks. But number two in the country, I'll be honest, I'm still thinking, you know, this is still Oregon of, you know, reputation from a pre-Dan Lanning, preseason, you know, hype is high, but so it is in Austin with Texas Longhorns, same in South Bend. The Hoosiers are, for Notre Dame, the Hoosiers are the defending national champions. I was thinking Oregon would be kind of somewhere in that 6-4 range. just I know they've got a lot of talent coming back. It's just kind of like it always kind of feels where they are. But number two, that's where they check in. They're very clear cut, close to Ohio State. Expectations are as high as they've been, and they're only going to get higher now with this ranking.
Yeah, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm sitting here trying to think, when was the last time they debuted at two? Or is this the, do we have data on that somewhere, Matt? Because
I might be able to find it. Hold on one second.
Yeah, because, you know, and I apologize for not thinking to look that up in the 20 minutes between when this dropped and now that we're recording, kind of in intervening time, I had the opportunity to do that and I didn't. But this is as good as a reputation as Oregon has had, you know, I think in his program history, probably. If they've been at two, that's probably the highest point. And I'm thinking back, like, were they two?
So I have AP 10? Preseason history.
Okay.
On a very quick glance. I can probably find the coach's one if you give me some time to run through a bunch of years. But from an AP preseason poll, in 2024, they were number three in the country. And then they did it also in 2014, 2013, 2011.
Who were they in 2010?
In 2010, they were 11th in the country. Okay. 2012, they were 5th in the preseason AP poll. 7th in 2015. 9th going into the COVID year of 2020. And then last year, the second year in the Big Ten, the Ducks were preseason number 7 in the country.
So, yeah, so it sounds like two is the record. And we're using the coach. We're using the coaches poll today because that's what's been released, and the AP poll is the data. So maybe there's some, maybe it doesn't quite line up that way. But either way, you can make the case like a preseason number two is as good as Oregon has ever been. And you know, I'm curious. We don't have this data in front of us yet because it hasn't been released publicly, nor has it been sent out company wide. But Matt, when they do the 247. Team talent composite, which is, you know, they assess a value to each player based upon recruiting ranking, put it all together. That gives you a real sense of like the best rosters in college football. I think that's going to be dropping sometime in August. That's usually the case, like in the next week or two. I'll be fascinated to see where Oregon's at there because I'm gonna guess they're going to be right in this range of like 1 through 4, right? I I'm guessing that's what voters were reacting to here. Is the fact that Oregon has an incredibly talented roster. And I think on paper, top to bottom, they have a case for the most talented roster. When you look at what they've got coming back on defense, when you look at the high-end talent on offense, like there's not a lot of holes there, right? And we'll talk about some of those because those certainly came up at yesterday's Oregon Media Day. But I look at this team and say, sure, if you want to be skeptical based upon the way the last two seasons finished, I get that. I think you also have to recognize like, so much is back on offense, even more is back on defense. And it's not just that the returning players, like, shoot, Matt, would we be surprised if 12, 13 guys get drafted next year? And if, like, I don't know, a handful of those go in the first two rounds? Because
no,
I think that's kind of the expectation that they might have 6 or 7 first, second round picks.
So I found a story from a couple of years ago that the U of O released. Oregon came in at number 3 ahead of the 2014 season. Okay. And it was the highest ranking that the Ducks have landed in the preseason since as far back as 2013. They did it a couple other times. I think 2013, they were also ranked number 3. So I feel pretty confident in saying that this is the highest preseason ranking from a coach's poll perspective that they've ever had going into a season.
Yeah. Well, and now we see if that's misguided or not. Like I said, I was probably in the mind of like one or two of the SEC teams might be ahead of them. Like I wouldn't have been surprised to see Texas or Georgia ahead of them and they were at 3. But I felt like 3 to 4 was probably the range. And the fact that they're at 2 doesn't totally surprise me because, again, I think when we get more data on the roster, you know, kind of the breakdowns, and I know somewhere out there we can find the blue chip ratio in Oregon is I think like 4th or 5th there, but just top to bottom, this is a really talented Oregon team, and I think we see that reflected here. And shoot, do Oregon fans like being ranked here? You know what I mean? I mean, it's one thing to say the respect is being given; the other one is you're putting a pretty big target on your back here, right? Because you look at the schedule. Matt did a good job of putting some numbers next to the names. Like, outside of USC, there's not really a team based upon these preseason rankings, which again, we could put as much or as little stock as we want into. There's not really a team here that really should challenge them necessarily. Like USC at 14 is the second best team on the schedule. I'm not saying that means they're not good enough, but they're not even considered a top 10 team, whereas Oregon is getting, you know, the fourth most first place votes and is second in this poll.
Six teams received first place votes. Oregon has the fourth most. Ohio State 38, Indiana 14, Georgia 7, Oregon 6, Notre Dame 5, Texas 2. To your point, though, Eric, about the schedule and the strength of schedule, this is why you're in the Big Ten. This is why you moved to the Big Ten, because Washington, Michigan, USC, as long as they kind of just fluctuate and float in that back end of the top 25 all season long, you assume you beat them.
Sure.
Even if you do lose to Ohio State in Columbus in November, you can go in and say, we've got three top 25 wins over opponents and that are in the top 25, and which you would assume if this kind of translates over to the playoff rankings, you know, Oregon's strength of schedule is going to be pretty strong. You factor in maybe a Boise State sneaks in there, maybe an Oklahoma State in a weak Big 12 sneaks in there.
Matt, I want to acknowledge Illinois is 29th here, so they're right on the cusp with 62 votes as well.
So, you know, you've got an opportunity to have anywhere from realistically, if you beat Ohio State plus those other three, maybe an Illinois sneaks in or a Boise State, one of those two, you might have six wins against top 25 caliber opponents, five wins, four wins. And that could be the difference in being a team that has to host a first round playoff game at home, or a team that finds their way into the college football playoff, you know, semifinals right away or quarterfinals right away without having to host.
And then I think the last thing here we should hit before we dive into some of the media day stuff is just what this sets up with Ohio State, right? The preseason 1 and 2 are on the schedule November 7th. That game is going to be huge. If both teams take care of business, and both teams have relatively difficult schedules. I know Oregon doesn't play any other top 10 teams before they get Ohio State, but you know, I just kind of downplayed USC, but that's going to be a challenging game, right? Like there's going to be some difficulty with going to the Coliseum and pulling that off. But if Oregon's able to take care of business and they get to Ohio State on November 7th, this is undoubtedly number 1 and 2. And at that point, it's kind of probably based upon merit of what the schedule has been in terms of the order. And that's the only thing we're discussing. So it is very much in play that game is number 1 versus number 2. And the fact that we start the season there creates, like, I think, a pretty big storyline about what this season can look like in the Big Ten, but especially what this game can be. And shoot, like, maybe they play on the 7th, it goes one way, and then they have a rematch about a month later in Indianapolis. The date escapes me, but I think it's like December 4th or 5th between these two teams. Because if they are able to play up to this level, obviously as the top two teams in the country, like, they're not going to be a one-off this season. They'll either meet each other in the conference championship game, or maybe they'll play each other up to three times because they're probably going to meet in the college football playoff at some point. So, so much has to go right for these scenarios to play out. But like, this could be a really big year for the Oregon-Ohio State quote-unquote rivalry.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll transition over into takeaways from Oregon Media Day, where we spoke with over 24 athletes for the school, and plus head coach Dan Lanning and Dante Moore. All right, welcome back to the Austin Audibles podcast. Media Day was there inside the club room of Autzen Stadium. There was probably, I don't know, 35, 40 or so media members there to speak with the Oregon athletes. I didn't recognize any national media members, which has happened from time to time. Some big names do show up, opportunities, but mostly the media from across the state of Oregon, Southwest Washington, were in Eugene speaking with the Ducks. Dan Lanning spoke for about 20-ish, 25 minutes with the media. It was pretty spunky Dan Lanning. I think he was a little bit more forthcoming than maybe I anticipated. He still didn't divulge into everything he was asked. And he a couple times he's like, I'm not going to share those details of where we focused our improvements on, you know, because there's some coach sitting in a closet watching that video. You guarantee it.
Those are all the closet coaches. They're just watching other teams' press conferences.
Yeah, admit, just taking notes of information that gets leaked out unexpectedly. But nonetheless, he was forthright with the rankings. Like, hey, like, yeah, we have high expectations. We make these goals. We make these expectations because we're the guys in the arena. But there's also no running away from it either. They know that it's kind of a championship or bust type season, especially when you get today's news of being a number two team in the country. It's going to be really hard to not win a championship and feel like you fulfilled your season's expectations.
Yeah, I think that feels fair. And maybe it won't as we get further into this season. I mean, like today, looking at these rankings, looking at these rosters, considering how many people made the decision to come back as opposed to go pro, right? Like, and that has been, I think, probably one of the things that opened up Oregon to be number two as well, not to belabor this too much, but it is kind of that corollary of like, this reminds folks of that Ohio State team that won the title a couple of years ago where, you know, JTT and Sawyer came back and all these kind of big time, I'm sure I'm forgetting several big time names from that Ohio State team, but there was kind of just a collection of people that said, we're going to make this. We weren't satisfied with what has happened the last 3 years of in this program. Let's take it up a notch. Let's come back. Let's make a real push. I think that feels like what's taking place. And excuse me. The word that I think of the day for me was hungry. And that was one that Coach Lanning used to start the day. And that's his observation of his team and kind of like where their head's at is that they are focused. They want to, they know what the goal is. And like, you know, I think speaking with players, some people hit it on the nose and just said, yeah, we're trying to win a championship. And other people maybe were a little bit more careful with the wording and just said, we're trying to set. I think it was Brock Thomas who said, you know, we're here to create history, to do something that hasn't been done at this school. Like we all, I think listening, you can look up and down the Oregon record book and all the things they've achieved. And it's pretty impressive, but there is one glaring omission. We all know what that is. And so, yeah, I think that feels this is what this felt like yesterday, a group of guys who are really dialed in and have a very clear goal and understand what's at stake, but also like there's a level of I think they're pretty loose too. Like I think they get there's pressure, right? And you hear that pressure is a privilege. That's a term you get tossed around a lot at various football programs, but certainly that was mentioned yesterday. But you also got a sense that they're handling it pretty well. Like that there was a level of like kind of playfulness and you know, whether it was acknowledging farting in the huddle a couple of times or whether it was making jokes about other parts of the team or referencing, I can't tell you how many times, and I know your ears probably perked up, Matt, how many times people talked about golf, which seems to be becoming more and more popular within this program and led seemingly bowling by Dante. Too. Golf and bowling, yeah, those were two. Anyway, so like, but you know, you get the sense that there's a good mix of like, hey, we're dialed in, we want to do this, but also like we're making sure we're having fun, we're making sure we're kind of focused on things, not just football.
Dante Moore, Eric, there's a level of transcendence a QB goes from where he's kind of the expected starter going into year one, and he's a big name, face of the program. There's obviously a lot of attention that goes his way, and that quarterback obviously has to carry himself a certain manner.
Sure.
But then there's another level that guy takes when he has a good year. The team has a good year. He comes back for his second or maybe it's his third year as a starting quarterback, and expectations exponentially grow for that player and for that team. And that's what Dante Moore has gone through, and he's now carrying himself. I feel like there's not an arrogance about him, but I think there's probably a comfort level of, yes, I am an elite quarterback. Yes, I am one of the best players in college football. Yes, I am looked at as the face of the program, if you will, and I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with who I have to be in this role and the commitments that I have, at least from a presentation perspective. He was very at ease. He looked comfortable. He talked confidently. He was humble when he needed to be humbled. He looked the part of a Heisman, you know, granted it's speaking in front of the media. It's not hard, but he just has a different, I guess to use a cool term right now, all the kids are saying aura. He just had a different aura about him going into this media day. I felt like that was the same thing in Chicago. He's just taken another step of evolution as a player, as a person, and as a representation of Oregon football.
Yeah, I think the way I put it, it felt like we saw more of like his personality was like present, right? And like you mentioned public speaking, like I do this podcast, it's easy. But if you put me in front of like, I shouldn't say it's easy. We probably make it look a lot harder than it should be. But if you put me in a room full of 40 people asking me questions, and I'd get a little bit, for a while, probably a little bit anxious. And like that anxiety would probably, I wouldn't be quite as interesting as I could be. Maybe I'm not that interesting to begin with. I don't know. But I think with Dante, like I think that anxiety is like kind of disappearing. And you know, you're right. I totally agree with that. I will say he still uses the same filler word at the end of the day over and over again, which is, I think, just part of going through the maturation process of kind of filtering through the words as you're talking. But I totally agree. Like I thought the fact that he, like, I think the eye contact stood out to me because I just remember last year at times, and maybe it was after tough games and he was kind of didn't really want to be there. But I remember a couple of times after, you know, even wins, he'd just be kind of looking down at the stat sheet, wasn't really looking at the people asking the questions, and some of the humor wasn't there. I agree. You could get a sense he was just kind of at ease with himself, and this makes sense, right? Like he's growing and maturing. He's now a 21 or 22 year old, you know, college football star has been in the spotlight. And I agree, Matt. I think he is ready to embrace the moment, right? That's what it feels like from a personality perspective. And now the question becomes, has his play reached the point where he's also ready to embrace the moment? Because at times last year, that was kind of a question mark. And I did ask him, so did Bill Orme of the Oregonian, like, what do you do with that Peach Bowl game, right? And he said he's kind of, that's behind him now. He's flushed it. He acknowledged he did take some time to watch what Mendoza did in that game and to kind of learn from his craft, and was really, you know, impressed with some of the things he did. But from his own perspective, it was more like, I made a bunch of mistakes. I know I made the mistakes. I don't need to dwell on them. Let's put it behind me and move forward. So we'll see if that approach works. This is certainly a team that needs its quarterback, and that's every single one of the teams in the top 25 and probably every team in the country. It needs its quarterback to be playing at a high level to make the run and reach expectation, but certainly nothing he did or said on Monday, and based upon what I heard from you about Chicago, nothing he's done in the last week and these moments has really deterred from thinking he's ready for this.
Let's dive into some takeaways now that we got with speaking with athletes, a wide range of guys. I'll go first here, and Eric, I'm going to go to his backup, Dante Moore's backup.
Yeah,
just because this kind of struck a chord with me right away. It's certainly an area to explore. We get cool stories like this, cool angles, different angles that are during fall camp. We're so focused on what can we learn about what's happening on the field.
Sure.
This is an opportunity from a media perspective of talking to athletes as people and getting background information and knowing their makeup and all of that, of where they're coming from, where their headspace is at going into fall camp. Dylan Raiola, the backup quarterback for the Ducks. Obviously, we know who he is. Transferred from Nebraska. Probably going to be, I guess, was tentatively going to be redshirting, but now that's no longer going to be the case. He's got 5 years for 5 years of eligibility. Will serve as the backup. And, you know, he was talking about, like, his role and his expectations. And he threw out the knock on wood. He literally knocked on wood. He's like, hopefully nothing happens to Dante Moore. He can go and have a Heisman caliber season, win the award. We win a national championship as a team. He has the season that he wants to have, and he goes off and gets to the NFL. And then I kind of step in when it's my time next season. But he said, I'm preparing as if I am going to be the starter and as if I am going to be the guy that has to, you know, lead his team, as he should, right? Like, that's what every backup should be doing, regardless of position, regardless of sport, what have you. But then he was asked, when's the last time he has gone into a season not expected or not already defined as the starting quarterback?
Mm.
Which I thought was a really
good question.
Good question to ask. And he sat there for a second and was like, actually, this is the first time in my life I've never gone into a season where I'm the starting quarterback. And it was a cool moment of like, and he was at peace with it too. He, just like Dante Moore, I felt like Dylan Raiola was different. And I asked him, you know, kind of, hey, you've made it very clear, like, you obviously want to play, but you also want to learn. You also want to grow. And, you know, Dante Moore has come out here and said that he hopes that more people, he can be a trendsetter and more people come and wait a year and develop and then go and play. You've kind of experienced the go play right away. And now you're following in those same footsteps. Like, what are your thoughts on that? And Dylan Raiola was very forthcoming of like, yeah, like we live in a world now where everyone just tries to go and play right away. And that's certainly something that I did. And I've come to realize, I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, I've come to realize like I need development. I need time. I need to, you know, it will help me to sit back and watch and to learn and to digest information. And it was just a cool moment of seeing a guy like, yeah, this is uncharted waters for me. I've never had to sit before, and I'm at peace with that. I'm cool with that. Like, if that's what the team needs, obviously he wants to play, but if that's what the team needs and if that's what's going to make me a better player, sign me up. He was all in on that. And, you know, as he should present right now, but it just was a cool moment of a guy that's reached the high levels, has played elite football all his life, kind of step back and be like, yeah, this is going to be good for me not playing and learning and digesting and processing things.
Yeah, I actually asked his main competition for the backup role, Brock Thomas, just about like, you know, because he had said a lot of positive things throughout the interview about Dylan, you know, in kind of surface level things, or just not like, it wasn't like a specific answer about Dylan. He mentioned like they were the two best golfers probably on the team. Brock didn't want to say he was better. He said that's not the way he goes about it, but that Dylan's really good. And that certainly in the quarterback room, Dante Moore might be talking about golfing a lot, but he's still kind of new to the game. And Dylan and Brock have been kind of schooling him, it sounds like, on the course. But then I asked him, like, what, you know, has being with Dylan on a day-to-day basis been different than maybe your expectation or reputation of what it was going to be based upon all the media hype and social media stuff and kind of everything that followed Dylan from high school to Nebraska to now? And he was quick to be like, I don't really know what the reputation was. I didn't really pay attention to that. What I knew was immediately he was a really nice guy and we've become really good friends. Like, you know, like, and so that seems to me like just seeing him operate with people on this team. Like, I was interviewing Poncho yesterday, you know, at the scrum, and Dylan had gone to the group before. And Dylan came up and dapped him up and waved at him as he left the elevators, you know, as he's going. You could just tell he's ingratiated himself on this team. And however he's done it, I think has to have come from being kind of real and honest, like you're talking about, and kind of maybe taking a step back and kind of, you know, appreciating where he's been, but also acknowledging like, hey, I'm not there yet, and like kind of humbling himself. And that seems to be what we're getting from Dylan Raiola. So I totally agree. I think that's a good one to point out, especially because not too long from now, he's going to be the guy, right? And like, yep, what he is going to define the next couple of seasons after this, probably, of Oregon football. And so far, you know, everything you've heard has been really encouraging. Trying to think here where I want to go first. I thought Aiden Breland offered a couple really interesting insights into Tank Jones and Matt Johnson that I kind of wanted to share. It's sort of nothing that like completely leaps off the screen. And I guess I'll also bring up, I wasn't there, but I know Nasir Wyatt said he's weighing close to 250 pounds, which should get,
yes,
Oregon fans just really fired up.
I'm going to touch on that here in a little bit.
Okay, cool. I just was thinking about edge and defensive linemen, and it kind of popped in my head. But sounds like Tank Jones, we still haven't gotten official heights and weights, by the way. We did get a new roster, but I think Tank Jones might weigh like 290 pounds or something like that. I didn't get that directly from Aiden, but you know, I asked him, he's gained a lot of weight, right? It sounds like he's basically playing inside as much as he's playing outside, which was not what we expected when he, I think, arrived at Oregon in like the 230, 240 pound range back in January. So that one really stood out. And you know, the takeaway from Aiden is like, it's not just that he's big, it's that he's big and strong and ready, like as a young guy. Like he was just really impressed with that. And then he said Matt Johnson, I think Breland is anticipating that he and Matt Johnson are going to be like the next Amarian Bear, that like they've become really good friends behind the scenes. They've worked at it. They think that they're both ready to take a big step this year as kind of like the primary backups. And then 27 is their year. And he said he thinks Matt Johnson's the strongest guy on this team besides Amari
Washington. Really?
So yeah, other than Amari, he thought he's got the best numbers on the team. So he's kind of pushing Matt as like this guy is so much stronger than you're expecting. And again, I'd love to see updated heights and weights to see what they put him at, because I think he was just around 300 last year, maybe a little below it. The hype for these kind of young interior or young edge rushers, it continues to grow and grow the more you talk to guys. And I understand I'm talking to one of the other young, exciting defensive linemen to get that information, but you just get a sense the more you speak with these players that like there's not a lot of questions among them about whether this D-line depth is going to be good enough this year, right? Like we all know the top line guys, all the guys below those guys basically left. I don't know if we're seeing them take a step back, actually. I think it's possible we come out of this year feeling like, hey, maybe they're not like decidedly better, but like we come out of this year feeling like that was not a hole on this team. That didn't hold them back.
Yeah, I can echo those comments. You know, the defensive linemen I spoke to, they all – I remember speaking with Mateo Uyungale about like – so I think someone was asking just kind of like what excites you about the four guys that came back? And he was like, yeah, that's a big deal for us. But honestly, I'm excited for the guys that are going to have an opportunity to make their names be known, because sure, you guys haven't seen it, but we have. And we've got a lot of dudes that were still waiting in the wings that stayed, that didn't transfer out, that are going to have impacts. And that seems to be a very common mutual feeling among the four returners, that the four, you know, the four, five, six guys behind them are going to be capable of playing at a high level. It's now just, can they take advantage of their opportunities that are clearly going to be present this year than that weren't available or were less last year? I guess I'll go right into next year, Wyatt. This is one of those guys. Yeah. Everyone talked about him being someone that there's a high expectation for this season. He looked – you go to fall camp, you do media days, you see players. Sometimes you're like, wow, yeah, that guy cut a lot of weight, looks really good. He's in good shape. Other guys, yeah, he's put on a good amount of weight. He's bulked up significantly. That was Nasir Wyatt. He looked significantly just visibly different, bigger than he did last season. He said he put on 20 pounds in the off season, really trying to showcase his skill set and build his frame to a handful of NFL guys that are currently in the NFL this season. And he mentioned multiple players of guys that he's kind of tailoring his game after. He did also bring up David Bailey from Texas Tech this past season. And he said he really wants to be around 250, 255. He's at 245 right now. He also acknowledges it's probably going to be a multi-year process to get to that weight, you know, and to do it in a way that is clean and successful for him as an athlete, because he still needs to be able to possess the strength and the speed and the quickness that made him such a good terror off the edge for the Ducks last season, and kind of a niche specialized pass rushing role. But he also acknowledged like the 20 pounds of weight added will allow him to be more of a complete player. He won't have to just be a pass rusher. And he quickly figured out that like, hey, if I want to be on the field more next season, as in 2026, he needs to be more of a complete player than just someone that can go and bull rush, pass rush, quarterbacks, and because teams know what's coming when he's on the field. And so he made a real clear point to, I need to be able to control the C gap, and I also need to be able to read quarterbacks better, of knowing when they're passing and when it's going to be a run, so I can stay home and keep my containment or fill my gap and be able to do my responsibility. But this is a guy that I was with Amari Washington for a little bit. He brought him up. Tatum Tuioli brought him up. Mateo Uyunglele brought him up. There's a lot of players, his peers, that are really high on Nasir Wyatt and his ability to make a more overall impact on this team in 2026 than just being a pass rush specialist like he was as a true freshman in 2025.
Yeah, I think another guy who noticeably looked different was Elijah Rushing, who I know has come out and said he weighs 290 pounds now, which is kind of mind-blowing. And really, like, that's not where I thought his career was going when he got here. That's not to say it's the wrong path by any means. It's just like when he came in, I thought he was going to be like a more of a 6'6", 270-pound kind of Mateo, you know, size edge rusher. And now you're seeing someone in the 290 range who can slide inside a little bit. So that definitely stood out. And then one other kind of like weight gain journey that I kind of talked to somebody about was Andrew Olesh, who, this is kind of interesting, Matt. He was 200 pounds as a freshman when he arrived at Penn State as a tight end. We kind of wondered about, like, oh, why did he need to redshirt? Like, why couldn't he have played? Well, if he was a 200 pound tight end trying to play D1 football at a school like Penn State, which I know didn't finish the year there, but began the year as one of the top teams in the country, you're not really capable of playing at 200 pounds. And he said he quickly got up to about 230. He's now at 240 and wants to get to about 245, 250. So that's a player who, again, kind of a lesser name than some of these others, but, you know, we talk about the tight end position. There's no clarity after Jamari who the next guy is. And I think it gives you a bit of a sense from Andrew of like, hey, he's still got a bit of a way to kind of get this body worked out, because we have to remember, like, he didn't block in high school. He was basically a receiver. He's now making that transition to playing tight end at this level. And he did acknowledge, like, I can go catch a football, whether or not I can block at a high level. That's what this fall camp is going to be about. So just another kind of quick blurb on somebody putting on some weight. And then the last thing I wanted to touch on, Matt, is I talked to a lot of people at the offensive line, starting with Dane Lanning, who just acknowledged, like, hey, a lot of this is yet to be determined, right? Like, he's aware that people like us go out there and we put our two deep predictions out there this time of year. And we're talking about, like, oh, who might start here, who might start there. Like, I think Dan's message is we could do the same thing and it wouldn't necessarily mean anything, because even though we might have a sense of where things are at, like, there's still a full camp to be had. And, like, nothing is clear cut, you know, aside from probably Poncho and Dave being interior starters. So I think that's kind of an important way to look at this. And I think the other thing that really stood out to me is just, like, so many of these veteran offensive linemen really buy these young players. Like, they're really buying into Tommy Tofu. They're really buying into Manny, as we call, you know, Emmanuel Iheanacho. I think people called him Nacho mostly, but Manny was the name I was hearing from all the players on Monday. Those guys came up a lot. People talked about their size, their strength, and just looking at them, they're different. And there was kind of a sense of, like, yeah, it wouldn't be a surprise to some of these guys if one or two of them were involved this year. Whether that's as a starter or not is kind of remains to be seen. But that was a bit of the sense I got. Another player to kind of bring up here was Janoris Wilson, who broke his foot against Iowa. He told me he broke it on the second drive of that game. So, like, basically immediately, and then played the entire game on a broken foot. He's now back at full strength. He acknowledged, like, spring ball was hard. He did a lot of watching. He knew this was potentially his year to finally get a starting role, and to kind of be slowed in that process was hard. But he expects, and unfortunately we're not going to be in practice to confirm this or not, but he expected as of Monday that he would be full go at practice on Wednesday. So that's another name to know in this competition. Just important to bring up, because I think we've kind of talked about him more hypothetically since the injury. We didn't know what the process to get him back would be like, but it sounds like early August he's ready to go. And I think that's an interesting kind of name to know there. But I'm fascinated by what happens at offensive tackle. Like, I think we think Fox Crater's a left tackle. He certainly seems to think he's ready for that moment. What happens at right tackle, I think, can go so many different ways. And probably that almost decides some of what happens at one of these guard spots too. But I don't know. I came away feeling probably about the same, just because it was like I entered being like, hey, there's a lot of question marks here. And I left feeling like there's still a lot of question marks here. But I probably feel a little bit better about like the floor of this, just talking it through with guys, because there's just a lot of players that these veterans are really excited about. And that should get you, I think, encouraged that they're seeing the reason why Dan and company didn't go out and add three or four transfers. And then just the last thing I'll say on this is, you know, I think in 2024, which was the last time they had some early season offensive line struggles, and I think of what happened against Idaho and Boise State, I'm hopeful, and Dan even acknowledged that they might be rotating into that point of the season. I'm hopeful that they get it figured out in fall camp, because I think this team is talented enough to just run through September, you know, into USC without too much problems. But as we acknowledged earlier, Boise State and Oklahoma State are both getting votes in this poll, and they both have a lot of dudes up front that could be issues. And if they're not settled up front, like I think there's some urgency here to figure this out, even though, as Dan Lanning said, like this month of practice is going to be important. Like, I think my hope is that they leave August being like, okay, we feel good. We've got our five guys and it's set. Because if there's some kind of uncertainty or growing pains going into these first couple of games, I don't know if they're going to lose them, but they could get a little bit wonky here with just some of the questions. And you don't have to look too far back to find an example where that was the case.
Yeah, rotations are normal in the college football world for offensive line. Rotating on a regular basis or across the entire season is not normal. I would hope, like you said, the offensive line by about the USC game kind of settles into where they fit best together, and then you kind of get that main group going as a unit together. Now, I'll end mine with one last note. I would be remiss if I didn't bring up Evan Stewart.
Good.
This was a guy that, much like I talked about with Dante Moore, totally different persona. I mean, this was a level of, look, we'll call a spade, right? Like 2 years ago when we talked to him, we were like, yeah, this is definitely the high level elite receiver. Definitely knows he's really good. Is going to talk about how he's really good. Had a little bit of arrogance / swagger about Evan Stewart.
And I think we were both like, man, he took a lot of shots at Texas A&M. Like a lot of the interview was like, they didn't do me right, which was
right during the 2024 season. Fast forward now to media day going into the 2026 season, and this is a totally different guy. This is a guy that I think he talked about. His quote was, I'm starved for football. Like he has never had to sit before in his life. And he's now been forced, let alone like, it's not just a coach's decision and you can go do X, Y, and Z to get better and you'll get back on the field. No, like there was nothing you could do other than rehab to hopefully get yourself back to on a football field in 2026. He could not play football for over a year. I think that's really humbled him. I think that's relit a fire within him. And it's, you know, look, it's a media day setting, but he said all the right things. The way he carried himself, not that he was a bad teammate before, but this was a guy that you could totally tell, like, man, I lost football. I now have it back. I'm not going to take it for granted. And I love being around my teammates. And he just feels, sounds, looks like a different player. He even said that he's like a top end burner guy. Like it takes him a little bit of time for him to get his top speed, you know, from a running perspective on the football field. He said now post-injury, post-rehab, he feels like he's quicker now. He still has that top end burning speed, but he can get there quicker now. And he's just, I asked him like, man, like every receiver that we've spoken to today has talked about how they feel like they've got the capabilities of being the best receiver in the room. And this unit being one of the best in the country. And like, why do you feel that is? What are your thoughts on it? And he didn't even say like, yeah, I got a chance to be the best guy in the receiver. In this room, he flipped it and said, it's because we've got so many different skill sets in this room. We all can be the best at certain things. And that makes us collectively as a group significantly tougher to defend because we've got so many different guys that can do so many different things. It was a night and day approach with Evan Stewart. Dan Lanning shouted him out at Big Ten Media Day on the Pat McAfee show last week. Multiple players shouted him out during Media Day. And then when he spoke, you get the feeling, you see it in his eye. This is a guy that's hungry, knows this is his last chance of playing college football, and knows that with a big year for Oregon and a big year for himself, they can go hand in hand and be intertwined, and it can set himself up for a huge year. And he's all in and on what is needed of him, whether that's blocking or being the go-to receiver.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes the most dangerous guy in a football team is like the hungriest guy. And he feels, I mean, to use your quote, he's starved of football. He has not played. And it's not even back to the Rose Bowl. You have to go back to, I think it's the
Big Ten Championship,
against Penn State. A game I don't think he did much in, to be honest. I have to go back and look at the stats. But, you know, I think actually the last catch he had was at Autzen against Washington, maybe. Maybe that's something I remembered from the past. I have to have that fact checked. But this guy just hasn't been playing football for a while, right? And the thing with Evan Stewart was when he came to Oregon, it was with the expectation of, like, first-round talent. Like, if he puts it all together, first-round talent. Now, when he came to Oregon, it was kind of assumed it was going to be 1 year and maybe 2 years. And now it's proven to be three. And, you know, the talent remains there. The fact that he feels like he's maybe even a step faster and can get to that top speed quicker, all really encouraging. I think that the reality with him is, like, he still has, like, he's not the, there's a bunch of, I mentioned earlier, there's like maybe half a dozen guys on this team who could go first or second round in the next year. Evan's probably in that group, but he's probably in the bottom kind of name or two, right? Like you'd run through your Dantes, your Mateos, your Amaris, you know, your Jamari Johnsons, maybe your Tatum Tuioti or Bear Alexanders. And then you'd kind of get to Evan Stewart, right? Like he's not right at the top of that list. He still has the talent despite being a little bit older for a player, you know, kind of pushing for this. He still has the talent, I think, to be one of those first or second or third ducks off the board. Maybe not first, because I think Dante is just going to be a lock for that, but he could certainly be in that range if he has an awesome year. And I think he knows that. Like he understands, like throughout, you know, when he arrived at Texas A&M through now, he's known, like, I have top 15, top 20 NFL draft potential. Now, whether or not he gets there is a matter of his own performance. And I think he understands, like, kind of all comes down to this year, because coming off injury, what he achieved his first 3 years, they kind of don't tell the full story. So what he shows this year is kind of everything. And I think, as he said in spring, it's a do or die year for Evan Stewart. And I'm really excited to see what that looks like, because frankly, if every one of these receivers is healthy, I'm going to knock on wood, and everybody is kind of focused and fits into their role, this should be the most talented pass offense Oregon has probably ever had. Like, I think that's very much in the realm of possibility. And having a player like Stewart kind of front and center there, a veteran, as opposed to a second-year guy like a DeCorian or a J-Mac or even a Jamari, a second-year at Oregon, like, I think that's pretty significant what he can be for this team.
It's going to do it for us here on this Autzen Audibles podcast. We'll be breaking down more, bringing more information, scoop, news, analysis from Oregon fall camp throughout the month of August. The Ducks' first practice will be August 5th. Dan Lanning will speak following that practice with the media. And then for the next, I don't know, 26 days or so, the football program will be having practices pretty much every day. We'll be speaking pretty much every day outside of about 7 days during that 4 week period, with athletes or coaches or both. We'll be getting Dan Lanning, with the media probably, I think, about six times during fall camp. We'll get a full scope of where they are. So go to duckterritory.com. Stick with us here on the Autzen Audibles podcast for a full coverage of Oregon fall camp as they gear up for the 2026 season, where they are preseason number two in the country. But until the next one, you've been listening to the Autzen Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.